Hi, everybody, and welcome to another Storage Unpacked podcast. This is the first one of the new year, so Happy New Year to Gavin and Martin, who are on the line with me.
Happy New Year, Chris.
This week, we've got a special guest who we've had on the podcast before. We had a great podcast with them. Actually, we had two in the end. We split it in half because there was so much great content. We've got Jim Handy on again. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Happy New Year to you.
Thanks, Jim. So, Jim, just as a bit of background for people who may not have heard the first podcast, do you want to just give us that 20-second elevator pitch about your background?
Yeah. So, I am an industry analyst following the semiconductor market and more specifically the memory chip market. That includes NAND flash, DRAM, and SSDs. I provide semiconductor manufacturers with inputs about where the market is headed and, you know, what's likely to happen next. Also look at various technologies, including NAND flash, 3D XPoint, things like that, and do that in reports on the Objective Analysis website. So anybody who's interested in that sort of thing, also investors in that market, might want to look at objective-analysis.com.
Wonderful, thank you. And of course, online people might know you as the SSD guy or the memory guy.
Yeah, I didn't mention my two blogs as two things that I just talk about, both technology and markets for those.
Yeah, so I'll put those in the show notes, but obviously we know we can catch you online there. Today we thought we would catch up about NAND technology, the way that the market is at the moment in terms of potential shortages, whether we're likely to see shortages in the next 12, 18 months, the impact that has with DRAM, and at the end of the day, because we were all talking about enterprise, how that affects enterprise customers. So let me kick us off with a first question for you, Jim, and that's really to try and understand the market and where we are with 3D NAND and what delays there have been in the marketplace, why they've occurred, and what we should think about it.
3D NAND is an extraordinarily difficult technology for the NAND manufacturers. They've basically had to drop the way that they were making the product before and adopt an entirely new manufacturing method that's unlike anything that's been used for semiconductors in the past. And so because of that, 3D NAND is actually 3 years later than they were expecting it to be as recently as 5 years ago. That has caused a shortage because the manufacturing capacity that was put in place to produce 3D NAND is not being used very efficiently. And so it's been very difficult for the NAND flash manufacturers to keep pace with increasing demand the way that they had anticipated that they would. They're still working to get that last breakthrough that they need to be able to turn that situation around. And I'm expecting for that to happen in the relatively near future. For the past 2 years, I've been saying that that should happen around the middle of 2018. That's when I would expect to see the demand or the supply catch up with the demand for NAND flash.
Okay, so is that specific to any particular type of NAND? I know we said 3D, but is it specific to any particular type like QLC, MLC, or is it just everything that's been a problem?
It's everything. That NAND flash is basically a chip that you can use to produce any kind of MLC, QLC, TLC that you'd like to, even SLC. The manufacturers just decide kind of at the last minute which one of those are going to be running in their fabs. From the customer standpoint, the SSD maker or anybody else, cell phone manufacturer who's using those chips to make their products, they usually set themselves up so that they don't care what products they buy as long as whatever they get is the lowest cost per gigabyte. So they're very agnostic as to whether they buy TLC or QLC in most situations.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, I guess, because you'd think that the whole industry was headed down the route. We keep seeing MLC is going to get replaced by TLC, but going to get replaced by QLC. So you sort of get the impression that the industry is trying to push us down that route continually to the higher density products.
Yeah, the higher density products are necessarily lower costs, too. If you have, let's say, 128 gigabit SLC capable product, which is what a lot of 3D NAND is capable of doing, it will make a 256 gigabit MLC product or I don't know what that number is, a 384, I think it is, gigabit TLC product, or it can make a 512 gigabit QLC product, just depending on how able you are to manage the number of bits that are on each one of those cells. And necessarily, the price is about the same for the chip, no matter whether it's shipped as an SLC, MLC, TLC, or QLC. And so then it's when you look at how many gigabits or gigabytes you get per dollar for that chip, you're always going to get a better price the more bits you have per cell.
I guess I've got a really stupid question. And this is a stupid question because it's something I guess I should have known than about the other guys. But when the manufacturers make this product or these products, can they then make them into the earlier ones? So if you make it suitable for QLC, can it still be a TLC or an MLC product, even from the same die? Is it the same thing?
Yes. Not only that, but in certain cases, it's under software control. So, for example, something that Samsung regularly does, and I think some of their competitors do, is to use certain parts of the NAND flash that might be MLC or might be TLC flash. They use a portion of it as SLC when they need to have very fast writes. Once that area doesn't need to have fast writes anymore, then the data is copied into a different part of flash that is TLC.
I wasn't aware of that. So effectively, there's tiering going on within the actual unit itself then.
Yeah. Not only that, but also there's DRAM inside almost every SSD, and that DRAM is used for tiering.
Yeah, so I was aware that, you know, the DRAM was there to take writes and to do caching, but I guess I wasn't aware that they were being aggressively, or at least they were being active about using the substrate for different densities in order to get that performance hit. That's an interesting angle.
These are really complicated devices. And, you know, that's one of those beauties of Moore's Law. It doesn't just make your memory chips denser, but it also makes the controller cheaper. So you can take a controller that would have been prohibitively expensive 10 years ago and stick it into an SSD for under a dollar.
Okay. Well, I suppose that sort of should make sense, really, shouldn't it? Because if you look at how cheaply you can get the consumer-grade devices, you sort of should expect that things like that are possible. But it doesn't always apply because you always think that enterprise is going to have that somehow better quality, if you like.
Yeah. Something interesting about all this MLC and SLC stuff is that I have a graph that I actually presented first, I think, to a SNIA, the Storage Networking Industry Association conference, where I pointed out over history how SSDs were a consumer thing alone, that nobody would be able to use them in the enterprise because they weren't reliable enough. And then the SLC SSDs started being used in the enterprise. Meanwhile, consumer had moved over to MLC, and people thought that MLC was never going to be usable in the enterprise. Well, after a while, people got more sophisticated with their controllers, and MLC got into the enterprise. The consumer moved over to TLC, and now we see TLC getting into the enterprise. So the enterprise is adopting less and less reliable NAND as the controllers get more and more sophisticated.
That'll scare a lot of people. So in terms of that demand then, is a lot of that demand coming from the consumer side of things? Do they get prioritized, or, you know, does that represent a challenge for the enterprise, do you think?
The big thing with who gets their orders serviced by the NAND flash manufacturers is who places the largest orders. It's always a question of the muscle coming from the companies with the biggest money bags. And so Apple Computer is a very good example of a company that can pretty much tell the NAND flash companies whether there's in a shortage or not a shortage. They tell the companies exactly how they want to do business with them. You'll have other smaller firms, I think Violent Memory might have gotten hit by this, where they are a poor credit risk and they don't buy very high volumes. And so the NAND flash manufacturers, every time that Violin wanted to place an order, then the manufacturers would say, well, you know, we're not so sure about you guys. So those are the guys who get squeezed out during a shortage like this. It's not the enterprise versus consumer, but it's the companies that place large orders versus the companies that don't.
But surely that does mean the consumer does tend to win, because people like Apple and Samsung themselves are placing much, much larger orders for smartphone manufacturers, and the consumer device manufacturers. It means that the enterprise is probably going to get a bit squeezed.
Well, not really, because the enterprise also buys an awful lot of DRAM. And all NAND flash manufacturers, with the exception of WD SanDisk and Toshiba, also manufacture DRAM. And so these enterprise manufacturers can shop around to different DRAM manufacturers, depending on whether or not those guys will also support their flash needs.
So let's move on and talk about China, because I think you mentioned this on the last time we had a conversation, even very briefly, that China was sort of on the cusp, was something that we have to be aware of. And it sounds to me like the Chinese are starting to move into this marketplace. And so what's the position with that?
China is a very interesting case study here, because they manufacture something over 80% of the world's electronics goods, almost exclusively with imported chips. And so it's only natural that they should want to start using homegrown chips to be able to go into those. The easiest markets to get into are the commodity markets, which memory chips fall into, that a new manufacturer can go to an Apple or to somebody else who consumes a lot of chips and say, would you buy my chips? They're just like everybody else's. You wouldn't be able to do that with a processor. You'd end up having to get somebody to go and redesign their system to be able to use a new processor. But for chips, then it's just a very simple commodity. So China's getting into the memory market. It's very natural for them to do it. And the only question is, how fast are they going to get there? There's some skepticism as to whether or not they'll meet their goal of being a major producer by 2020. But say they miss that by a year and it becomes 2021, it's still, they're going to be a very important part of the marketplace.
Is that new entrance into the market? It's not, this is not just some of the existing players deciding to relocate to get cheaper premises. This is actually, is it new?
Yes, it is new. And as a matter of fact, people are usually startled to find that a new manufacturing plant for NAND flash or for DRAM costs somewhere north of $10 billion. So that's billion with a B to install. Well, China, when they decided that they wanted to get into this market through an organization called Tsinghua, they gathered together a bunch of investors and put together a war chest of $140 billion to be able to do that. So money is not an object for them.
Well, yeah, clearly not. That's clearly clearly the case, isn't it? Wow, $140 billion. Yeah, that's a sizable amount of money.
And it'll be interesting to see the business case on that one as well, what they expect the demand to be and what they expect the returns to be on that.
Well, that's something that's very different from my perspective and from your perspective, because in the United States and in Europe, there's a very tight focus on profitability. Whereas in Asia, we saw this in Japan, Korea, not so much in Taiwan, they're very profit focused, but now in China, is that the focus is on market share. You know, how do we get more of the market, and can we withstand the losses it will take to get into that?
I guess what we're saying is, you know, cost of money to them is different to the cost of money as it is to us, and that's the way you're viewing that. Taking that a step further, and the fact that we were talking about these being new entrants, I would have thought there was a certain amount of technology awareness and knowledge you need to have in order to get into this market. And obviously, we see a lot of innovation around things like producing 3D NAND. Are the Chinese going to have that same level of innovation, or are they just simply copying the other manufacturers?
This is a place where you get into a very strong cultural difference between where China is now and where a lot of other countries are. Most Chinese manufacturers don't spend an awful lot of money on research and development. You need to spend about between 10 and 20% of your income on research and development if you want to be an important player in this marketplace. What they've done so far is the Tsinghua, the NAND flash manufacturer there, has partnered with Spansion, who is a very respectable U.S.-based manufacturer of NOR flash, but they don't make any NAND flash of their own. So Spansion and Tsinghua are working to develop NAND flash. The technical people that I speak to who used to be fab managers, the CEOs of semiconductor manufacturers, are all very skeptical that this will work. And so it is likely that they're going to need to use some kind of a technology partner to be able to get into the marketplace. But that's not their direction today. Part of their direction today is actually to hire people from existing manufacturers at inflated salaries and try to put together a team of people from the different companies, from Samsung, Hynix, Micron, and Toshiba SanDisk, to be able to do that. But I haven't heard from around the industry very much faith that that kind of an approach is actually going to be able to work.
So on the one hand, we think they are going to get into the market, but on the other hand, they seem to have a technology gap in order to achieve that. Am I reading that correctly?
Yes, you're exactly spot on with that. So the thing that I think is the one thing that will prevent them from failing, they might be delayed, but I don't see that there's a way for them to fail. And that is that they have an enormous shock absorber with this $140 billion. You know, let's say that they do spend $10 billion or even $15 billion on a fab. That means that they've still got about 90% of their fund intact for, you know, being able to make up for mistakes, being able to suffer with losses over the first few years of manufacture. And that's something that's going to work very much to their advantage.
Wow. Okay. So be aware of the Chinese then in this marketplace.
Yeah. I used to say something like this in the 1990s about Samsung, and I would call Samsung a slow-moving steamroller, that the company made it perfectly clear what they wanted to do, and their competitors had no choice but to get out of the way.
And look where they are now.
I was going to say, it's like dealing with any of the Chinese companies. I've had a few dealings with them, and they are very much a long game. Take their time, and eventually they will win.
Yeah, I've seen this happen. For a while, I dabbled in photovoltaics. And in 2007, 2008, that was a very high-flying market. But China made some investments in producing bulk polysilicon, which there was a shortage of for the photovoltaic market. And that blew the bottom out of that marketplace. I've heard people tell me that they've also done the same thing with steel, with LEDs, and even with flat panel displays, which now are significantly cheaper than they used to be. So it's just, it's NAND's turn.
That sounds like that's a great thing for all of us then, because, and I guess this is the thing that everybody wants to know, is where is the price going to go long term for NAND and DRAM? What can we expect? How can we see that all playing out in the future?
Here's something where it's useful to have somebody who's been in the industry as long as I have, because I've been in Silicon Valley. Actually, this is my 40th anniversary of being in Silicon Valley, and watched the same things happen over and over again. One thing that always happens is everybody says Moore's Law is dead. We're not going to have any further cost reductions. Nobody can do that. And I first heard that probably in 1981. I hear it repeatedly, and it's not dead. As a matter of fact, all it is it's not a law. It's not something that physics prevents you from going past, but it's a rallying cry for the industry, that everybody works as hard as they possibly can to get costs to cut in half about every 2 years. And so with that behind them, then they come up with these very clever innovations to be able to get past that. And that's what 3D NAND is that NAND flash hit an absolute wall at 15 nanometers. And so Toshiba, back in 2006, first introduced their new concept of 3D NAND, which they gave the name bit cost scaling, BICS, because they said if we can't scale the X and Y directions of the NAND flash the way that we used to, then we'll go in the Z direction. We'll actually make it the cost scale the way that it would have if we had been able to go past 15 nanometers, but we'll just do it using a different mechanism. DRAM, likewise, is having the same kind of thing. So if you draw a line of 30% on average cost reductions per year, which gives you, you know, about a cutting in half every 2 years, that pretty much shows what happened in the past. And it's a very good idea about what you're likely to see for a very long while in the future.
And that's been consistent. I mean, if you look at the hard drive industry as well as flash industry, there has been always a consistent reduction in cost, doubling or increase in capacity. From my perspective, I think there are two bits I look at. I think of it in terms of a micro view and a macro view. And the micro view is the, oh, isn't it clever what they've done in this bit of technology and all the rest of it. But the macro view sort of says, actually, let's just look at the trends and we can see this cost reduction and capacity growth consistently. And if you're an end user, I guess you're more interested in that macro view, that that is really going to continue for a considerable amount of time.
Yes, yes, that's true. Now, you know, in the short term, you're always going to have shortages and oversupplies. It's always going to bounce back and forth between the two of those. And during shortages, prices go up a little bit, but typically they go flat. If you stand way back from the curve and look at it, you say, yeah, that's a bumpy flat part in the curve. Moore's Law causes the prices to continue to come down, or the costs, I'm sorry, the production costs to continue to come down. And so those periods become very profitable. But at the end of the shortage, then there's a lot of space between price and cost, and that all just disappears, that prices collapse down to cost. And then they tend to follow costs for a year or two before the next shortage strikes.
So how far are we off from a collapse now, Jim?
That's a really hard one to call. My company is in the business of forecasting when there are going to be turning points in the memory business. And we have been looking at 3D NAND and really wondering when it's going to become something cost effective to manufacture. Our best guess is the middle of 2018, but it could be about to happen now, or it could be something that doesn't happen until sometime in 2019. But what we're saying right now is look out in the middle of 2018. there should be some kind of an oversupply that develops that causes price crashes to happen, which for you guys and your clients, that's an absolutely wonderful thing. For my clients who are the manufacturers of semiconductors, it's a terrifying thing.
What does a price crash really mean? I mean, what are we talking about in terms of differences between what people might be paying now?
DRAM and NAND flash manufacturers right now are making between 50% and 60% gross profit margins, and that is going to become zero. And their net profits after they put the SG&A in and all of that, then they're going to be losing money. Another way of looking at it is that 3D NAND at 32 layers should have a cost structure of about 12 cents per gigabyte. NAND flash today is selling for at least 23 cents, usually about 25 cents per gigabyte. So prices are going to come down over the course of maybe two quarters to about half of what they are right now.
So when you say the prices come down, let me give you a little comparison with the way things work in the UK in terms of pricing. When we look at the cost of oil and the cost of petrol, or gas, as you might want to call it, the raw cost of the oil can drop significantly. But we see like the minutest amount of change in the cost of the petrol, because ultimately there's tax, there's various other production costs in there. Does that same thing happen with NAND? So if the cost of the raw NAND drops significantly, does that only reflect in a small amount of reduction in cost for the end device?
Actually, no. The tax people at the government haven't gotten very smart about taxing SSDs, so that doesn't account for very much at all. And if you take the components that it takes to put together SSDs, 80% or more for a larger SSD of the cost is NAND flash. And so if the cost goes down, then there's going to be pressure on the manufacturers for the price to go down too. Anytime one SSD manufacturer decides that they're going to lower their SSD prices, then everybody else needs to follow suit.
So I'm going to ask Martin and Gavin their view on what would happen if the prices did drop like that. How do you see the enterprise market changing?
I'm not sure it will change massively. I think it will have an impact, but the thing will be, because hard disks from a bulk point of view are still so much cheaper than SSDs, so it's not going to impact the bulk market. It'll be very interesting to see, well, how much of that price cut actually gets passed on to the end enterprise user anyway via the big storage vendors to start with. I mean, not often I think we don't see these sort of things come through very quickly. I think I see it in the consumer market, but not necessarily in the, unless we have a price war.
And I think that's exactly it. It's when the first one snaps, when the first vendor breaks and goes for it. And we've seen that before with some of the hard disk pricing drops that have happened in the marketplace, is that everybody holds firm, waits for one person to crack, and then everybody goes for it. The question I have for you, Jim, is when you're forecasting that price crash to come at some point, do you expect that to be a dip in pricing and then they'll try to recover again? Or do you actually think that'll be a sustained crash? Because the question I have, if I was working for a vendor that was actually buying in those devices, I would be thinking, is this a temporary thing? Am I going to see a price drop and then a price hike again? Because there was a number of vendors got caught out with things that have happened in the past, like with the floods in Thailand and stuff like that, where, you know, hard disk prices dropped dramatically, but then there was actually a sudden problem in supply, which meant that the prices surged back up again. So do you see this being a sustained, we drop down to around 12 cents a gig and then stay there?
That's typically what happens in any semiconductor market, is that the prices never come back to where they once were. And that's mostly driven by Moore's Law. The prices are headed down about 30% per year and over the long term. And the only things that you see are bumps in that curve, that prices stay flat during a shortage like they are today, or roughly flat. And then they fall very steeply down to costs at the onset of an oversupply. And then once that oversupply is over and a shortage comes back, then the prices flatten out once again. And so what we'll see is a price per gigabyte, which, you know, I'm looking at rather than a price per SSD. Yeah, we see a cost per gigabyte dropping significantly and then staying there and going flat during the next shortage.
So the question comes of what will be the gap between the SSD vendors, you know, dropping and the enterprise storage vendors dropping. Traditionally, we do see that take some time. I think, Chris, Martin, you'd agree. The question's going to be, back to your point, Martin, is how long it takes and who's the first to crack. But we are seeing a lot more competitive pressure in the all-flash array market, particularly at the moment. So I don't see it being a very big gap.
I wonder slightly on that, because if you let's pick one example. If you look at, say, Pure Storage, I think they'll claim about 60, 65% margin, yet they're still not quite into making profit. And obviously that's off the back of selling what is a relatively expensive component. Now, does that mean if the cost of the raw materials drops, they can actually become more profitable? Or does it mean that if the cost of the raw material drops, they'll be in a more difficult position because they won't be able to push the margin as big? And therefore, they'll be worse off. I'm just trying to, I can't get my head around which way around it should go.
It sounds like the server market to me. Several years on, it's kind of what's been needing to happen, and let's be honest about it, in the storage hardware market for a long time. We've all talked about the impending commoditization of storage. Has it really happened? I don't think so, to a full degree at the moment.
I'm not in your business, but I would tend to agree with that. The reason why is, from my understanding, you buy a server and you put somebody else's software on it. So the server manufacturer doesn't really have any way of causing their server to look any different from the server from their biggest competitor. With storage systems, as I understand, an awful lot of what the storage systems manufacturer sells is a different set of support, different software. And so, you know, that would make them significantly different from each other, to the point where they'd be able to keep their prices pretty stable. One other thing about servers, about the storage, but if you look at just the NAND chips, they're a commodity. They're going to collapse 50%, let's say, in pricing. But then those go into SSDs, where only 80% of the price is the NAND flash. And so that lowers the amount of price drop you should expect to see in an SSD to only 40% when there's that 50% drop. And then you put it into an array, and you put all of this other proprietary secret sauce around it, and then suddenly the contribution of NAND to the overall cost of the device, if it's priced to cost in the first place, is going to be relatively small. And so it could be that a 10% or a 20% price drop would be the most that you'd expect in something like that.
Still reasonably significant in a competitive marketplace, though. And I think if they... You know, to sum that up, I would say if they don't pass on the savings, it's going to be handing the software-defined storage guys a lot of business on a platter, because, you know, the commodity hardware guys can really make a difference. At the moment, there's an argument that there's more risk introduced by that. People are prepared to take more risk if it gives them something in return. And if it gives them a 30, 35% saving, then more people will consider it. So it'd be interesting to watch that one.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was thinking this price drop potentially does really enable the software-defined guys to, if they want to, it's their chance. It's really, really is their chance. With server-based storage or server-based SANs, if you can stack your server full of cheap flash, you're probably in a really good place now.
Would you do that, Martin? I mean, you know, as the token end user on the call here, would you actually consider that as a direction?
Yes.
Okay.
Wow. your EMC sales guy just fell off his chair.
Yeah. Well, hang on, Gavin. The EMC arrays, if you were to take some of them, these things like an Isilon, it's just a server stack full of disk and flash.
It is. Which we all know, you know, increasingly it's become, you know, the Xyratex disk shelf and a server and a load of disks put in. We all know that. I mean, but a lot of people have taken, as I said, more than most end users are aware that you pay a premium to get it wrapped in a nice bundle that you know is going to work and is supported nicely. You don't take the risk of buying, you know, a load of components and putting them together. That said, it depends on the price difference. So coming back to Chris's point, the storage vendors, the enterprise storage vendors, have either got to lower their margin or risk losing some of the share to people that are prepared to what you just talked about, basically, and use SDS.
Yeah, going to make it tougher for them. Okay, well, that was great, Jim. Thanks very much for that. I think probably the best thing to do is to come back and, you know, perhaps in 12 months' time, we'll look at the market again and see whether we were accurate or whether we weren't and how it worked out, because it's always good to go back and look at those things in hindsight.
Yeah. You know, something that I didn't put in this that I do like to joke about is this whole thing about Moore's Law being dead and there never going to be any more industry cycles. I think, you know, this is the statistics side of me, thinks that there's probably some number of CEOs who, you know, once you get up to 6 CEOs or 7 CEOs who say that the industry cycle is over, there are going to be no more cycles, that is the time when to sell or buy stock, because that's when the cycle's about to happen.
That's when it's about to go. Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for joining us again. I appreciate it. And look forward to catching up with you on another podcast.
Yeah. Chris, Gavin, Martin, well, thank you very much. And Happy New Year once again.
Thanks, Jim.
Great.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.